And it is, in fact, time for our monthly media segment, Signals and Noise. One thing we've noticed about running a monthly media segment in 2017 is that the topics come fast and furious. We can try to lock up the topics a few days in advance, but the fire hose of news frequently shuffles our deck right up to the last minute. That's okay. It means there's always plenty to talk about. And we do define media very broadly, taking in items about the media themselves and content delivered over a broad range of media, from virtual reality to books. Our regular guests are here from the Communications Department at Southern Oregon University, Precious Yamaguchi and Andrew Gay. Good to see you guys back.
Good morning.
Wow, a week like this, when we have seen the fall, actually, since the last time we talked, we have seen the fall of media figures Charlie Rose, Matt Lauer, and Garrison Keillor. And I should explain to our audience again, anybody who missed the show yesterday, is that we don't have the Writer's Almanac anymore. The people who distribute Writer's Almanac upon Garrison Keillor's firing eliminated that segment instantly. So we'll have other things to fill the space, marketplace tech, at least for the short term. But so I mean, what do you guys make? It seems like it's not just it's political and media figures. And so it's a little hard to sort out other than to note that there's a very strong response to people who treat people in the workplace poorly.
Yeah, last month I took the students on a study abroad trip to Italy, and I was surprised to see even the news about, like, Kevin Spacey breaking in Italy and how that was very international. One of the things that I try to remind the students when we have this conversation was in 2002 there was an article that was published by David Lisiak and I think Peter Miller, and it talks about how it's not like all men are bad and it's like sexual predators, but it was showing how research has shown that like sexual assault is takes place by certain men who are actually the minority of men, but it takes place with so many different women that they go after or they harass or assault so many different women that it becomes this idea that there's so many bad men out there, but it's actually like these few that are doing so many bad things to so many women.
So talk about how that was discussed with your students, because you're on a trip in Italy as you find out this stuff. And then once you come back to the classes here at Southern Oregon University, how do you discuss this in your classes?
I mean, I think that in the rise of seeing so many people fired and so many women and people coming forward about sexual assault, that there's a certain type of fear that then takes place, like men are so awful, or you know, you can't go into like any field without all of these different sexual predators happening. But then I do try and remind students that, you know, it's also the timing of people coming out and them having a voice, which is really, really important, but also that these are also not every man. You know, these are not all the men in your workplace. There are, or in your classroom, there is research that shows that it's the minority of men that do such activity, but they're doing it consistently.
I teach in our film program primarily. And, you know, obviously a lot of these figures have been in the film industry. And so we've been really trying to tackle it head on with our students. I sent out a statement to every single one of our majors, reminding them of what the values of SRU are, and going further and talking about professionalism and equality. And I'm also a part of on the board of Southern Oregon Film and Media, which is a regional industry association for film and media. And we also released a statement as a board, kind of the same thing for our members, reminding them of what the values are. And I think the key thing here is that it's not simply that there are predatory men out there. It's that there are a lot of men in power, and that, you know, you look at a lot of these stories, and in fact, many of these figures, what they were doing was well known, but they were so powerful that they were able to protect themselves and other powerful men protected them. And so I think we need to look not only at, you know, how do we hold abusers accountable, but also we need to have more women in power. We need to have more diversity in terms of the people who are the decision makers. And so I've really been encouraging my students that, you know, this is a time to, you know, right now, even when it comes down to like the projects you're working on and who you're collaborating with and whose voices you're getting feedback from, you know, look outside your normal group of tight-knit friends, you know, try to bring in more voices into your projects.
I love that SOFAM put out that letter. I felt it was very proactive.
A chance to talk about that. Yeah, that you should be listening as well as putting your stuff out there. You're going to be doing some intake as well. I guess it shouldn't have surprised me, but I went to look at just sort of the latest tally of media figures who've been swept aside by sexual misconduct and harassment allegations. And the CNN piece that I pasted onto a Word document ran to 16 pages. Now, granted, half of that was pictures, but we're still talking about from Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly at one end to Matt Lauer, Garrison Keillor this week, Brett Ratner and Russell Simmons. I mean, it's just an amazing list of people, but these are people in positions of authority and power. And what you were talking about just now, Andrew, reminds me of the old phrase, the boss isn't always right, but he's always the boss. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the problem.
Well, like, you know, there's the Matt Lauer story. You know, part of that was this, you know, this office that he could lock from his desk. And in fact, that many executives at NBC have this. And so there's this issue of it's. So again, when people are in power, they're enabled to take advantage of people. And there might be some good people in power who just don't use those tools. But why are executives at NBC allowed to have switches under their desk that allow them to lock doors behind employees? That's a big question. So I think we really got to look at how, in general, how we are empowering people to potentially abuse others.
Media figures, media issues, our discussion topic here on Signals and Noise on the Jefferson Exchange with Andrew Gay and Precious Yamaguchi from the Communications Faculty at Southern Oregon University. Join the conversation. Get into it with us. 800-838-3760 by phone. What do you think about the vast wasteland of people who've been swept aside by sexual misconduct allegations in the last couple of months, last couple of years, actually? Well, even before that. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. It seems like every month we try to talk about net neutrality and it gets swept aside by another sexual misconduct story. So let's focus some time on net neutrality here because it looks like things are going to be happening potentially this month.
Yeah, December 14th is when we see if the vote for net neutrality, the end of net neutrality, occurs.
And this is a vote on the Federal Communications Commission. So this is within the agency itself. It's not a congressional vote.
Right.
And it's just the fact that there are more Republicans than Democrats on the FCC, as happens when there's a Republican administration.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that net neutrality is going to end. You know, people can certainly register their opinions with the FCC. There's no signal so far from any of the members that they're persuadable. So now the question is there anything, for instance, that Congress could do to legislate the issue as opposed to leaving it to the FCC? I don't know. You know, I think a lot of people still don't really understand what net neutrality is. So net neutrality is the idea that right now the internet is treated very similarly to other utilities. And so everyone has this equal access to the internet. And what ending net neutrality means is means deregulating. So that's kind of the message is like, oh no, we're it's not a free and open internet. It's regulated. We want to deregulate because that will make it open and fair. What that really means is that telecom companies can break the internet into tiers and have a fast lane and a slow lane. And you know, people might think, well, that's good for me because now I can pay less and just get the access I want, perhaps. But you know, one of the questions people might need to ask is, you know, what are the things that do not yet exist that you will want access to that you'll never see? So, for instance, you know, nowadays most people use social media or on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. Those were all startups that didn't exist a few years ago. None of them came from major telecom companies. So now, what happens when, you know, let's say you get your internet from AT&T, and AT&T decides, oh, you know, let's start our own social media network, or let's start our own streaming platform for TV, and we're now going to charge you extra if you want Netflix. So I think those are the kinds of things people need to think about is one, this is really bad for entrepreneurship, for startups who want to create the next media resource we want to use. And two, it really enables the people, the pipelines, to control what you're seeing.
So now, in other words, you can pay for better. But I said you're paying for a carpool lane is what it's like. So you can go a lot faster.
Right, and of course, you know, we can already pay for different speeds for ourselves. But it's also now it's saying, you know, different speeds at different kinds of sites, or and companies can sort of pay to be in that fast lane or not be, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So again, it's going to be an obstacle for anyone who's a startup who's creating the next Facebook in their garage, right? That person is not going to have access to the same audience that the actual Facebook has.
Yeah, I think it's also an issue of accessibility for everybody to be able to obtain the same information. And also the idea that the internet itself, it's not Verizon and it's not AT&T. The internet is based upon peering agreements in which there's a whole lot of different systems that make it so people can have internet access and so information comes through.
So do we expect to see rate cards potentially from the likes of AT&T and Verizon saying if your company is this kind of company and you want to do this, you're going to have to pay this much and so forth? Or
I think so. I think it was Comcast came out with a statement saying, oh, we have no intention of doing any of this stuff, but please approve the law that will let us do that. So I think that it's disingenuous for any of those telecom companies to be sort of saying, oh, you don't need to worry about this. We're not going to do that. I think that's exactly what they're planning on doing.
Is it because the telecom companies think they can make more money doing this? They can just sell a faster lane to companies that are willing to shell out for it?
Well, I think so. I think, you know, you look at the list of companies that are on either side of this, and you see companies like Google, for instance, are opposed to it. Well, of course they are, because they're not creating the pipelines, they're using the pipelines. So they don't want their traffic being throttled. Whereas, it makes sense that a company like AT&T or Comcast would be wanting net neutrality to go away so that they can create these tiers and make more money. So
can the traffic be throttled? That's a big question given the infrastructure right now. I mean, it was kind of funny because in researching a story this week, I ran across a CNN webpage from 97 that had the cute little flat buttons and the little blinking one by one GIFs advertising things in other day parts. It was kind of like, oh, look, Web 1.0. I'd forgotten what that looked like. But now, I mean, it's almost annoying at times. Thank goodness I keep my speakers plugged into a headphone so I don't blast the room with sound, but every time you go to a major news site, you know, there's a big streaming video box that comes up instantly.
Right. I think Verizon did something like that a while ago in order to slow down Netflix. Was it Netflix or YouTube? I think it was YouTube.
I know which time. I can't remember.
There was a BitTorrent case, too, I think I recall as well.
BitTorrent got, I think it was Comcast got a fined for throttling BitTorrent.
All right. So we're talking about issues in the media and net neutrality certainly on the table. Looks like we had a call and lost it. But you can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So let's move further into the telecom companies thing because it was, you know, it's weird because when I look at the list of topics that I have, you know, just sort of jotted down as things for us to talk about over the course of a month, by the time that you guys arrive, some of these topics just seem really old and they're only maybe 3 weeks behind us. Not even that, I think, in the case of the Justice Department talking about suing to stop AT&T and Time Warner from merging. And so I mean, the suspicion there is that because Time Warner includes Turner Broadcasting, which includes CNN, that this is a sort of a grudge from the administration.
Yeah, I think we had briefly spoken about this in the last segment because there were rumors about it at the time.
Right.
And saying that, oh, you know, are they trying to force CNN to be dropped from Time Warner? And now we're seeing the actual actions being taken. So I think it's certainly suspicious. You know, make of it what you will, I guess, at this point. But yeah, it's very interesting.
And I noticed too that this is that also we've had. Let's see, this is November 27th, so it was the day that the president invited media outlets via Twitter to compete for the fakest news. He said we should have a contest as to which of the networks, plus CNN and not including Fox, is the most dishonest, corrupt, and/or distorted in its political coverage of your favorite president (parentheses me). They are all bad. Winner to receive the fake news trophy.
And which I think I saw this morning, was it Rasmussen came out with a poll where they had actually done a poll based on that question, and Fox News was rated the highest of fake news in the poll. So that was kind of interesting. And Rasmussen is generally considered a somewhat right-leaning pollster, so that was kind of interesting.
It's an interesting point in history, though, when we have the president asking for the networks to compete to see who's the biggest set of liars.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the president's Twitter account is a constant source of news. I mean, we have the situation with him retweeting,
far right.
Britain First.
Right.
Yeah, and literally causing an international incident where, you know, I don't think we've ever seen a prime minister have to condemn the U.S. president in the terms that Prime Minister May used this week. And, you know, that could be long-lasting damage to the relationship between the U.S. and Britain. And you also have the issue that some of these tweets were literally fake. I mean, they were misrepresenting information that had happened.
Who the people were,
the fake identity
and all that. Yeah.
And Twitter, of course, comes out with a statement saying essentially that they don't responding to the question of, you know, why aren't these a violation of Twitter's terms of service. Why is the president allowed to essentially retweet hate speech or the kinds of things he's retweeting? And Twitter came out with a statement saying essentially that, well, sometimes we allow violations in terms of service to basically cover all sides of an issue, which was, you know, I saw one user essentially saying, it seems like what Twitter's really saying is that what the president does is drives traffic, and we're not going to stop him from doing it.
Interesting.
Right.
And I noticed, too, that the president's discussion about or who should receive the fake news trophy happened the same day that a woman approached the Washington Post with the tale about Roy Moore, and appears to be part of an undercover sting operation run by James O'Keefe, who has managed to ding a couple of entities, NPR included.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jamie Phillips was the lady.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that also it's interesting that all happened within the same time and that was sort of that winner of the fake news.
That was an incredible story. I mean, that's actually one of my pick three. Is anyone who hasn't read the story or watched the video, it's just a great case of getting to watch real journalism happen in real time.
I heard some of the clips on Here and Now the other day with them saying, well, you know, some of your parts of your story don't add up, Jamie. I mean, we did the fact check they don't report that you were employed there.
Right. What's amazing is that, you know, there's so many people who, you know, wherever they fall on a particular issue, such as the Roy Moore, you know, if you support Roy Moore, you say, oh, well, these are just people lying and the Washington Post who hates Roy Moore is publishing fake news. And so to get to see someone who actually is lying and went to the Post and tried to dupe them so that they could expose the lie, and watch how real journalism works, and that, oh no, they're not just publishing whatever anyone comes up and says to them. They actually do their homework, and this is how they do fact checking and expose lies is just phenomenal. Because, you know, this organization set up the Washington Post in order to help Roy Moore, and instead they actually help the case of those who have accused, because it shows that actually the Washington Post does its homework.
It does fact check.
Yeah, even like when I was in undergrad and I was working on a fashion magazine, our work would get fact checked at least 5 to 8 times through different sources and certain sources. We could only use certain sources. So that wasn't even a huge like newspaper or news organization. But real journalism, it does get fact checked, I would say, at least 5 times.
That's great. Multiple layers of fact checking. Good to know. One more thing I do want to bring up is the idea that we don't even, you know, we don't agree on things. We also don't even watch the same media. And I noticed this because I was looking at the funny papers yesterday. There were snarky references to President Trump in there. So it just tells me that there's just a lot of, you know, we have our own silos that we stay in this country, even though we have, with the internet and telecommunications now, the ability to look at everything anybody does at any time.
Yeah, people are very self-selecting. They choose that, you know, media that they disagree with is fake or you know, not to be believed. And so it's really dangerous, because we know that Americans have completely different concepts of what reality we live in right now. You know, it's kind of funny to see, you know, the Flynn story broke this morning that General Flynn is
Michael Flynn plead guilty to a charge of lying to the FBI.
And you know, sometimes people will do like screen caps of the different news organizations, and, you know, CNN, MSNBC leading with that story at the time. Fox was what did Lynch know about the Clintons? Right. And so this is not unusual to see. Where Fox News is running a story about the Clintons while CNN and MSNBC are running with breaking news about the FBI investigation.
Wow. Fox News at this very moment reads online, ex-general pleads guilty to lying to FBI, says member of Trump transition team ordered Moscow contact. Okay. So that's... So kudos to Fox for being on that one. A couple minutes left to get some pick threes in here about things that you are consuming in media, ranging from virtual reality to books. Andrew.
Yeah. Well, yeah, my first one is definitely, like I said, that Post story, watching the video of a real journalist, bust someone in real time is amazing. I love that. I've been telling everyone I know about this, and someone probably thinks I'm being paid, but I just discovered MoviePass.com, which is a monthly membership for, I think, $10.99 a month, and they send you a like a little debit card, and you download an app, and you can go to any movie at any participating theater one per day for $10.99 a month. And this is like, it's like a free money tree. Essentially, wow. You're selling your information. They're tracking your behavior. Sure. So you have to be okay with that, which I'm totally okay with, because I'm going to see movies like I haven't in years. And so that's my second one is MoviePass is an amazing resource if you don't mind being tracked and getting to see some more movies. And the first thing I went and saw with that is my third pick, which is Coco, which I thought was just a phenomenally beautiful film from Pixar, probably one of their best. I went with my whole family from my parents to my kids, and we were all crying and very touched by that film. That's
okay,
really great.
Cool. So there's Andrew's pick three. Precious.
Mine would be Broad City, the series.
The Abby and Alana. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a little crude. I feel like it's a female version of Workaholics, and it makes me cringe sometimes. But I like the comedy and the feminism that's embedded in there. So I kind of go into present and back. I also like the book 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Jules Verne. It's still exciting and relevant. And also I will say Coco too.
Coco. Okay. So either of you seen the Justice League movie?
I have not yet. No.
Okay.
I just saw Thor. That was fun.
Okay. Thor Ragnarok
really stupid,
is out there too.
A lot of fun.
Stupid and fun. It's a great recommendation. 4 stars from Andrew Gay. Andrew Gay and Precious Yamaguchi are the communications faculty at Southern Oregon University and our regular guests for Signals and Noise, a discussion of items in the media. Thank you guys. Good to see you, and happy holidays.
Thank
see you in January.
Thank you.
That'll do it for this hour of The Exchange. More coming up.